Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/bookshow. Then go over to morbidlybeautiful.com as we are now part of the Morbidly Beautiful Podcasting Network.
Now, here is a motion picture film.
And now, ladies and gents, it's yo time!
To do the bimes.
Say hello to my little friend.
Go ahead. Make my day.
Come quietly or there will be trouble.
I'll shove that bat up your ass and turn you into a popsicle.
Inconceivable.
Welcome to the All-American Spook Show Podcast.
I'm sorry, boys. I'm afraid I can't do that. I'm afraid I didn't do that.
Hello, welcome back to the All-American Spook Show Podcast. I'm Josh, and I'm joined here with Donnie.
Yo.
Tiana.
Hey.
And the Professor Smoke.
What's up?
And we're going back to the Cult Corner series, you know, back to the cult well, where basically our only criteria here is that it has to be somewhat of a, you know, obviously a cult favorite type of movie, but our main criteria here is that it can't be a horror movie, because obviously a lot of horror would be considered cult classics, you know, but since horror is our bread and butter, and we do that every other week, pretty much, and across all of our YouTubes and everything anyways. We've decided that, you know, once every, what, six or seven episodes when Cult Corner slides in, that we'll just avoid horror and pick something else. So this time around, we all, and the way we do it is we all nominate a movie, we spin the wheel, whatever's left, that's the one that we do. And Donnie, you nominated this one, right?
Yeah.
So what are we watching and talking about this week?
All right. So, yeah, I had never seen this, actually, and I'm not familiar with, you know, Philip K. Dick as far as the, you know, his books at all. But I chose it mainly just for the visuals. So we watched A Scanner Darkly.
Yeah, this is I remember watching this when it came out thinking, OK, it's fine. So we'll see if my, you know, now, you know, fast forward, what was it, 2006? What is, how many years is that? It's over 15 years, right? 15 or more years later, let's see if my opinion is any different this time around. We'll see. But I'm assuming that we're all going to have differing opinions on this one, because this is different. This is a lot different from a lot of the stuff that we watched here on the show, right? So if nothing else, it should be polarizing in an interesting way.
You know?
So we'll get into it here in just a second. But before we do, we want to remind you to go check out aaspookshow.com. We consider that the center of the Spook Show universe, because from there you can also, you can listen to all of our past podcast archives, but you can also go find our YouTube channel from there, where every month we have Grindhouse Gutter, we have Video Vortex, we have Hammer Horror and Order. Those are weekly series every month that we have going on there. And of course, podcast episodes are uploaded there too. So if you don't want to listen to them on your podcast catcher, you can go check them out on YouTube. And also from there, you can check out our Patreon. We encourage you to go become a patron of the Spook Show by going to patreon.com/aaspookshow, where every month you get a special video mini-sode that includes the Library of the Professor. Those are always cool. And the cool for you, not cool for us, monthly feature that everyone loves is Crafts for Peace Theater, where every month we throw up a poll on our socials and everywhere, and you, the viewers and listeners, vote for what steaming pile of crap we're going to talk about that month. And those can be listened to, I should say, only by becoming a patron at patreon.com/aaspookshow. Lots of other cool features on aaspookshow.com, so we encourage you to go check it out. So without any further build-up, we'll go ahead and toss to the trailer for A Scanner Darkly.
It may just be my imagination. Whatever it is that's watching, it's not human.
Gentlemen, you are about to witness for approximately 61 cents the perfect homemade silencer.
That sure is some silencer.
Just drive over to my place, kick back, get some tequila.
They're in my hair, on my skin. They're all over the place.
This is a world getting progressively worse. Can we not agree on that?
What's on the dessert menu?
Damage has taken place to the normally dominant left hemisphere, and the right hemisphere is attempting to compensate.
Two hemispheres of my brain are competing?
Yes.
I could be murdered.
How'd I get here?
I tip my hat to any entity that could bring so much integrity to evil.
What if they come in through the back door or the bathroom window like that infamous Beatles song?
Just sacrifice someone without them ever knowing it.
What does the scanner see? Into the head? Into the heart? Does it see into me? Clearly? Or darkly?
Is this awe-inspiring stuff?
All right, so there's the interesting trailer for that. So, Donnie, you said you had never watched this before, although you nominated it. Smoke, what about you? Had you seen this before?
No, this is the first time I've seen it. I had talked about this before. I don't know if it was off air. We talked about it somewhere else on the show. But I remember seeing it on the video store shelf, though. And I'm going to need to rent this. I need to rent this. And I kept passing it by. I never did get back around to it. And then it kind of went to the back of my mind, and I never really thought about it for a long time. Until K. Dick's name would come up in relation to Blade Runner or Blade Runner 2040, whatever, you know. Then I would remember Scanner Darkly, and I would think, yeah, I need to see that again. And it would just go back to the back burner. So it's been however many years that it came out on video, which I guess was 2007, if I had to guess, maybe a year after.
Probably late 06, early 07, I would imagine.
So since then, from then to now, it's been in the back of my mind. I need to watch this. So maybe I subconsciously built it up over the years or something. We'll get into it because I didn't have the most ideal of conditions for watching it. So that might reflect in my score. And I can tell you right now that I'm probably, when it comes to re-rating movies, when we do that at the end of the year, I'm going to hope to re-watch this one, and it'll probably get a different rating from this one. So, but we'll get into that.
Tiana, what about you?
I've seen like bits and pieces of it, but I never really actually sat down and watched it, and I still didn't get a chance to watch the whole thing. I only got through half of it. But I really liked it, so I'm definitely going to watch the rest of it at some point.
Yeah, so
she's in kind of the same thing that I am as far as like, and we'll get into that conditions for watching it type of thing.
You know,
I was able to finish watching it, but not, you know, but she couldn't.
This one for me is like I said a few minutes ago, like this was one that at the time, I think my problem with it was that it kind of got built up a little too much for me, like even at the time. Because I was like, Richard Linklater, you know, I usually like a lot of his stuff. And then you look at this cast, it's Keanu Reeves, Winona Ryder, Woody Harrelson, a number of others, you know, big names here. And Robert Downey Jr., right? And then you're like, you know, this has a lot of promise. And then when I watched it back then, I was kind of like, okay, well, it's fine. You know, it's just not. It's not exactly what I had built up in my mind. So I had only seen it that one time. I mean, and I'm almost positive I saw this in the theater. If I didn't see it in theater, it was right after it came out on home video. But I'm almost positive we saw it in the theater. And boy, I was probably, and I think I saw it with Willie, matter of fact, because I talked to him you know, offline about it. And we were probably one of the handful of the few that actually did, because this movie did not, you know, play very long and did not make much money at all. And we'll get on that in just a second. But, but like I said, we'll see whether, you know, if my opinion has changed this time around since it has been so long. But we'll go ahead and get into the background so we can get into it. It debuted May 25th, 2006 at the Cannes Film Festival, but it was released limited in theaters July 7th, 2006, and then it was released wide, so to speak, July 28th, 2006. And I only say that because I think it never reached over 250 or so theaters at any point in its run. So wide is very loose here, in my opinion. Like, to me, you say like a wide release of a film, it's going to have at least 1 or 2 weeks where it played in over 1,000 theaters or so. This never got to that. It worked up to maybe like 240, 250, and then went straight down. And even in that limited release, it was only like 12 theaters. So this didn't get played very much, and that was probably just because it just, you know, I guess it didn't connect with audiences. I don't think that was very good word of mouth. I think from what I read, the critics liked it. You know, like, I think most people that probably gave it a chance enjoyed it enough, but just the word of mouth wasn't there. And they really did, like, you know, with the budget and the way they marketed it and everything, was more like, had more of an indie feel to it. For a movie that has this kind of,
like, star power, yeah.
The power behind it, it's like it just never got any, you know, gained any traction there. So
yeah.
I think that had a lot to do with it. But it was produced by 1,000 Words, Section 8, Detour Film Production, and 3 Arts Entertainment. And it was distributed by Warner Independent Pictures, which is hilarious, right? That's like an oxymoron, Warner Independent. rated R, of course. If you've seen it, you'll understand. Total runtime of 1 hour and 40 minutes. On IMDb, it's listed as an animation, comedy, crime. And before I'll put a pin in that right there before I continue, because I just reminded myself, if you've never listened to The Spook Show before, we will spoil the hell out of movies. So if for whatever reason you have not seen A Scanner Darkly and you're like smoking, you kept putting it off, you might want to hit pause now and go check it out somewhere and then come back and listen to the rest of this, because we will get into spoiler territory. We don't want to ruin it for you if you don't want it ruined. But if you do want it ruined, stick around. It was filmed in the Austin, Texas area and in some areas around Santa Ana, California, from May 17th to June 9th of 2004. So over 2 years prior to its release was when it was actually filmed. That's because it had a long post-production process, and we'll get into that in just a second. For a budget of just $8.7 million, you figure with this cast and the way it looks and everything, it would have been a much bigger budget, but very low budget for this type of flick. But it only went on to a worldwide gross of $7.6 million. So I'd say by and large, they probably lost on this one. The top 10 in the box office. Now, I guess I'll go with the week that it actually opened limited in theaters. And I was wrong. I thought it was 12 theaters. It was 17 theaters. So I was off. My bad. But the very first weekend that it opened was July 7th through the 9th of 2006. So I got the top 10 in the box office. It did not crack the top 10. But like I said, it was only in 17 theaters. But it did make $391,000 in only 17 theaters. That's pretty damn good, you know, if you do the math. But the top 10 in the box office that particular weekend. And of course, you know, another thing that probably didn't help this movie either is that it's in the middle of the fucking summer blockbuster season, right? This is kind of a footnote compared to some of these movies that are out at this point in time in the middle of the summer. And you'll see why just now. Number 10, The Breakup. Number 9, Waist Deep. Number 8, Fast and the Furious, Tokyo Drift. That's Donnie's, one of his favorite Fast and Furious series.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we could probably start a whole separate, not podcast, but like a series on YouTube of just the fucking Fast and the Furious movies, because there's been like 40 of them at this point.
No. Yeah, dislike.
You would be in on that?
Yeah.
It's called the...
I get one veto a year, and I veto that.
The Fast and the Spook Show.
Fast and the Spookiest?
Yeah. Yeah, the Fast and the Furious, Smoke is Furious. That would be the subtitle. He would be hot. Number 7.
If we give it enough time, it'll be up there with Amityville.
Yeah, as far as the amount of movies, yeah. And Vin Diesel will be in every single one of them, because he just won't let it go. Number 7, The Lake House. Number 6, Nacho Libre, that Jack Black classic. Number 5, Cars, you know, the first one from Disney. That one was in its 5th week and still raking in at well over $200 million at that point. Number 4, Click. I believe that was a Adam Sandler flick, right? If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Number
control thing, right?
Number 3, The Devil Wears Prada. Number 2, Superman Returns. For some reason in my mind, I thought that was even further ago than 2006. I was thinking like early 2000s, and number 1 in the box office in its opening week, Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest. I'm not sure which sequel that is. I guess the second or third one. I don't remember all the lineage, since they didn't number them, that one had raked in its opening week. It made over $135 million. So clearly, if you went to the movies that weekend, you in one of those 17 theaters that this was playing in, you probably still saw Pirates of the Caribbean.
The lake had Keanu Reeves on it too.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that was like kind of like a wasn't that like it's like a romantic movie, right? But it was like something about like past and future. It was some kind of time travel or something to that, wasn't there? Or am I thinking of a completely different movie? Yeah, it was something weird with that one.
Yeah,
maybe. I think that was also, didn't Dawn of the Dead come out around that time? The remake?
That was before that. I think that was 04. If I'm, you know, just off the top of my head, I think that a couple years before.
I always forget how old, I mean, not old, relatively speaking, but then it came out in 2004.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's been 20 years. 20 years this year, I believe. Yeah. Anyways, continue on with this. This movie was based on the novel of the same name, A Scanner Darkly, which was written by Philip K. Dick in 1977. You may recall a couple of his titles were Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? And The Man in the High Castle. Those were probably two of his bigger ones along with this one, right?
Yeah, and of course, if there's anybody out there who doesn't know that Androids Dream of Electronic Sheep is basically is the Blade Runner, you know, is what they adapted Blade Runner from.
Donnie, I'm sure one of these days you'll take a deep dive into the writings of Philip K. Dick, right?
I mean, probably not.
I love your straightforward honesty.
Well, I'm just not much of a novel reader, you know, like
Have you ever tried Audible, you know, audibletrial.com/AASpookshow, but have you ever actually like tried to like listen to a big novel like that on Audible, or is that still
I feel? So, okay. Unless I am, you know, somebody's actually talking and I'm looking at them, I will completely trail off because, I can't do it if I can't just sit there and just listen to like a lecture or anything because I my mind will wander. I don't have the best attention span.
What about podcasts? Do you listen to podcasts?
I've already stopped listening to this one.
Yeah. Well, I would too, to be honest with you.
No. I can listen to podcasts. I have to be interested in the content and really just, you know,
There are some, I mean, like for me on Audible, it's hit or miss. Like, you know, to be honest, like, cause some you listen to that actually put some production values in them. And it's kind of like, you know, listening to a movie, different voices, sound effects, shit like that. But then there's others where it's just one dude reading a book.
And it's like Ben Stein.
And it's, oh God, you know, like
Jesus.
It's monotone or something.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Yes. It can get rough.
Like those. I don't know. They might have some of these on Audible, but even off Audible, where you get the that library. There's some library, something, whatever. Like you can go to YouTube, listen to it. But it's usually though, it's going to be somebody like that, somebody that you don't necessarily get to be entertained with hearing their voice. You know.
Yeah.
It like, depends on who's reading it.
Yeah, I mean, there are some that I've heard on there where it's just one guy or woman reading a book and they're doing the different voices and they're actually pretty good, you know, so you can kind of get into it. But yeah, mostly it's just somebody just reading it to you. It can get pretty lame real quick. So yeah, I guess we'll forego the usual Audible spot and we'll just say now, if you want to try out your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/spookshow. Again, that's audibletrial.com/spookshow to get your free audiobook. Back to the matter at hand here. This was actually there was a number of executive producers on this movie, but two of them were George Clooney and Steven Soderbergh, two of the more notable names that were producers on this. But it was directed and the screenplay was written by Richard Linklater, who you may most notably know from that cult classic. I know this is a cult classic that will get on Cult Corner one day, Dazed and Confused. Matter of fact, I think it has been nominated before on the Wheel Spans, right? I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it has.
I think
Willie.
It's definitely one that will get on Cold Corner at some point for sure. And another one, Boyhood, and that one's really interesting. I don't know if you know the premise behind that one, where like he filmed it over the course of like 10 or 15 years, right? Because he actually waited because it was about like this boy, who, you know, it's kind of like his childhood, right? Let's watch him grow up. So they literally would like kind of check in every few years, and just start filming the movie again as this boy is aging. So he filmed the movie over the course of like a 10 or 15 year period. And it's really good. And it's really interesting to see everybody age in real, you know, real time like that, you know, cool concept.
This brings one thing to mind that is totally, it might be all going off on it. I mean, it's related, but Jim Van Bever, the cult horror film director guy, he did a Manson movie called The Manson Family. He started on back in the early 90s, I think, and then he lost funding for it. Then he got funding from some distributor or whatever. Like, I don't know, 10 or 15, like you said, that many years later, 15, maybe 15 years later. And he worked that into the story because he had the actors who played the roles interviewed as the Manson family later on in jail or in wherever or whatever. So it worked in that case, too. It's just for him, it was an accident. He didn't mean to run out of funding and have to wait 15 years.
Yeah, right. Used it to his advantage.
Yeah.
As we mentioned earlier, this movie stars Keanu Reeves as Bob Arctor, Winona Ryder as Donna Hawthorne, Robert Downey Jr. as James Barris, Woody Harrelson as Ernie Luckman, and Rory Cochrane as Charles Frick. I think Rory, it's always a damn tongue twister. Rory Cochrane had actually been in Dazed and Confused as well, so I think he was somewhat of a Linklater guy, but he plays kind of the spaz dude with the bugs at the beginning of the movie. But yeah, this was actually filmed digitally, and then after like an 18-month post-production process, the way they animated this was rotoscope. So it does lend like a unique look to it, for sure, right?
Yeah, I was going to mention about the because I wasn't sure if it was rotoscope, but it looked kind of like it. But when I think rotoscope, I'm thinking of like the 70s and 80s, you know, Ralph Bakshi, right? Mm-hmm. Rings and Wizards and Cool and all that stuff. He used rotoscoping excellently, I thought, where he would like, it wasn't all rotoscope, but like this movie is completely rotoscope. I guess he would use hand-drawn animation and incorporate the rotoscope type stuff into it for a cool effect. This one, I guess you said it was digitally rotoscoped or something?
Yeah, there was actually like a, I've read there was something that they used called RotoShop that's like an editing program that, digitally, it's called interpolated rotoscope. So this is a different process than would have been used, you know, in prior times for sure. So this was shot digitally, though.
Yeah, like you said, you get that look a little bit, but I knew that there was something a little bit different about it. But
yeah,
just probably just the digital aspect versus the old school, you know, hand drawing, I guess, animation over the film cells.
Yeah, and this would have probably taken far less time, even though it was still an 18-month post-production. This would have taken far less time than that old, you know, the old way of doing it for sure.
That's actually part of the reason why I chose it, because it looked so visually interesting as far as like something, and, you know, we had talked about this previously, how, you know, something with this type of star power, I guess, was kind of, I guess, expected to do better, but
you would think.
You would think that, but, I guess really the reason I chose it was because you hadn't really seen anything with this type of, cast behind it. Really hadn't seen anything quite like it, you know, before.
Really, or since.
Yeah.
And probably because this wasn't, you know, massively successful or anything. But this is an interesting one that, like, obviously we're doing it here on Cold Corner. But I guess, you know, because it didn't necessarily do well, although it was kind of critically... I'm not saying acclaimed. Panned. Well, I wouldn't say panned either. It was kind of, you know, critically there. You know what I mean? Like, I think some people liked it. Some people were like, okay, whatever. This was a weird one because I don't know if it's ever really caught on as a cult movie. You know, like, this kind of feels like something that would later on. You know, like, and maybe we haven't got far enough away from it now for people to kind of go back and look at it and maybe have a second and third look at it to, you know, to kind of reassess, you know, the lack of success that it had back then. Because that's what makes a good cult movie, right? Is usually people 10, 15, 20, 30 years later kind of going back and saying, you know what? This failed, but, you know, maybe this wasn't as bad as we all said, you know? So, I don't know.
Like, something.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. No. I don't know if anyone's ever said that. I guess we can go ahead and get into the movie itself, though. I mean, unless you guys had something else you wanted to point out, that's about all I had as far as the background stuff was concerned.
Just one thing here, I guess, as far as like when I hinted at not having ideal conditions for watching it, I guess that'll probably end up factoring into my score a little bit. We watched it on a little Samsung Galaxy Pad, and this is not the type. This is the type of movie where you want a full big screen, the visuals and everything of it, right? So that and coupled with the fact that, you know, doing 12 hours of work, I was tired as hell. So get that state. This already is a drug heavily, you know, drug influenced type movie.
Yes.
I was already, you know, like in and out, like just complete, what do you call that?
Just tired.
Tired.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like, just don't, you know, in and out of whenever. And then watching this on the little iPad thing and then trying to keep up a complex. You know, this isn't one you just throw on in the background or anything like that, or doing whatever and listen to it. And, you know, you've really got to pay attention to a lot of this one. So, yeah, all of those factors are, unfortunately, didn't help me.
So you probably felt like you were on Substance D as you're trying to watch. You thought bugs were crawling all over you and shit. You're just going nuts.
Yum, yum. It's time for a tasty and refreshing snack. We promise to satisfy your hunger, your thirst, your sweet tooth. So visit our refreshment center now. Let's go.
Let's go ahead and get into it. I've got a couple of different Donnie, you know, you missed the last couple of weeks, right? You weren't here. missing in action and Summer of 84 the last 2 weeks.
Right? Yeah.
I only point that out because the last 2 weeks, anytime I kept going to IMDb for the plot summary, there was none. There was just like the one sentence one.
God damn it.
And that's it. But as soon as you show back up, brother, we've got some good ones here. I'll read the old one sentence one here first.
Just my luck.
An undercover cop in a not too distant future becomes involved with a dangerous new drug and begins to lose his own identity as a result. Now we've got the longer one here. This one's for you. Submitted by Huggo. This is one of our old friends here on the IMDb plot summaries. Huggo. Bob Arkner, an undercover policeman, is on a mission to investigate a group distributing a brain-damaging drug called Substance D. In the process, he becomes addicted to the drug himself and begins to lose his own identity. Based on the novel by Philip K. Dick, the film matches his hallucinatory story with the use of the rotoscoping animation technique, which is live-action footage altered frame by frame with animation. Seen also in director Richard Linklater's 2001 feature, Waking Life. In the not-too-distant future in Orange County, California, an undercover narcotics agent is known internally in the force only by his codename, Fred. His identity within can be kept secret as the scanning suit he dons hides his true identity. In reality, he is Bob Arkner. His assignment is to infiltrate a drug ring dealing in a hallucinogen known as Substance D, the ultimate goal to find the source of the drug. Arkner's own use of Substance D and moving within this drug world is making him lose his true identity, which includes a family life with two young daughters. As Fred, he's also assigned to monitor his own movements since one of Arkner's drug colleagues, James Barris, has come to the authorities to report Arkner's drug dealings, although Fred's superior, codenamed Hank, knows that Fred, in his true identity, is one of the people in the drug ring being monitored. But Hank and Hank's colleagues will do anything, even sacrifice Fred / Arkner, to achieve the ultimate goal of finding the source of Substance D. Boy, I don't know if that explained enough or made it more confusing, right? That was a lot.
I stopped listening.
So going back to the Audible thing a minute ago, like, you can't even hang in through two paragraphs. You're like, fuck it.
Yeah.
I quit.
I'm sorry. I wasn't listening. It's like Big Lebowski.
He throws the mug at him. I had a lot of, you know, this movie reminded me of the Big Lebowski in some ways. You know, there's some similarities there. I guess it's the drug stuff. You know, that I guess, that reminds you right away. Maybe it's just the fact that they're all like kind of shiftless drug addicts living in a dumpy ass house together. That reminds me of that. But it's like Lebowski, except not as charming, not as funny, you know, and just kind of there, you know, in a lot of ways. I we've said it a number of times now. I think the main appeal beyond the cast is the look of it, you know? And I think that's what I was most excited for back then when I saw the trailer and everything. I'm like, oh, you know, that looks really cool. The cast is great. So this could be interesting. And then when I finally sat down and watched it, I was like, you know what? Man, that my hopes were too big. Maybe, you know, like, I don't know. It's like, because there's not a lot to explain here. And it's really kind of a confusing movie. And Smoke, I'm sure you being half asleep and really tired helped out matters, you know, but like.
Immensely, yes.
Because, like, that's kind of the point, and really that kind of goes back to a lot of what, like, Philip K. Dick's type stuff was, right, where it's kind of, how would you describe it, surreal kind of stuff, where you kind of don't know what's real, you question reality kind of stuff?
Yeah, that's cyberpunk, kind of like, William Gibson's another author that comes to mind, it's like that hallucinatory type stuff mixed in with the not-too-distant future cyberpunk, you know, things that are going on. I mean, Blade Runner has some of that, but of course, Blade Runner had a bit more, the movie versus the novel or versus the story or whatever, a bit more coherency, plotline type stuff going on, even though it still gets a little bit complex.
I did like at the very beginning where it said 7 years from now, because you're not necessarily assigning a date to it. It's just kind of like you said, that not due to some future thing. So they just kind of get that out of the way right out the gate, right? Like 7 years from now. Okay. Well, that could be any time period.
It's kind of a cool. I mean, it could be 2040 and it's like 7 years from now. So, okay, so we're in 2047, this is going to happen or whatever.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it does have that. Like,
there's not enough in there to really date it too much either. You know, like, there's not anything in this that feels blatantly 2006. You know, maybe other than the lack of everybody having a smartphone, right? Other than that, like, you could believe that this is the not too distant future, right? So I think they do a good job of that. And then you got the whole scramble suit thing that he's wearing. And that,
yeah.
And that, like, that would be some weird technology, but it's hard to watch though, right?
So that, and this is going to sound silly, but that scramble suit reminded me of the Michael Jackson Black or White video. Where,
I know exactly what, you know, like where they're changing the faces, like,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it reminded me of. Honestly.
You said it's like quarter panels, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, like the left part of your face might be black.
Like this quadrants.
Yeah, you know, might be white, and this part might be,
yeah,
you know, a different color, and you might become a man, woman, everything in between in it. And it constantly should. What do they explain it as? Like you're just a vague, from a distance, you would like a vague shape. Like you can tell it's a person, but you wouldn't be able to describe who the.
Make heads or tails of it.
Yeah, yeah. And they disguise their voice too, so you have no idea. The thing that can, you know, I guess confuses. Would confuse you and somewhat confuse you as a viewer is like whether they're all in on whether they know who each other are, because that was the part that kind of threw me. It's like, I can understand an undercover cop wanting to wear something like this to conceal their identity, but amongst themselves, and maybe that's just so that they can all use each other. Isn't that one of the points, one of the themes of the movie is that like, even the people that are in charge are using the other people that are kind of in charge, right? Like, there's Big Brother is always taking advantage of everything he can, so I guess that's the point, right? Or part of the point.
Yeah, yeah. Like that you mentioned that too, that a Big Brother reference, it does kind of have a little bit of shades of 1984 in there.
Yeah. Yeah, because you're also living in a not too distant future of they're surveilling the hell out of you and it seems illegal. Like the way they don't seem like on the up and up about anything they're doing here, right? They're just watching everything you say and do.
Yep.
Whether they're actually allowed to do that or not. I think even in this future, they're not necessarily allowed to do it, but they're just fucking doing it, right? That says something for something that Philip K. Dick wrote in 1977. There's a lot of themes to this, you know, depending on how you look at the world now, right? There are things that translate even to today, right?
And it's interesting that, you know, talking about, you know, it being a drug movie and all that, that this was going to be, well, Terry Gilliam, the director that did Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, among many other things, 12 Monkeys. You know, he was with Monty Python. Mm-hmm. That expressed interest in doing this movie as far back as the early 90s. But just the live action, you know, he didn't have the idea of of doing the photoscope animation or anything. That would have been an interesting movie to see, I think.
Yeah, him. You know. Yeah, absolutely. Not that Linklater does a bad job here. I think, it's fine for what it is. I just think it's not, considering the way it looks and who's in it, it's just not as memorable as you would think it would be. You know, maybe that's part of the problem. It's just,
yeah. You know, I think that's,
and I'm not even saying necessarily they wasted the moment or anything like that. It's just, I don't know. It just, there's something missing here and I can't quite put my finger on it.
As far as the acting, the ensemble cast, it like comes together in certain scenes and in other, like the scene where they're all together in the house for a little while and they're like kind of riffing off each other with the drug thing and the jokes. That, you know, that was working for a while. But I mean, and in the car when they were, you know, driving the car and then the car, the pedal thing and all that stuff. Yeah, when they were there making cracking jokes on each other. That,
there's some of those long monologue type scenes where it has a flavor of Tarantino about it.
Yeah, yeah. But then, I mean, of course, they quickly get, I guess, again, like I said, I'm trying to remember this through a vague haze of like being tired and watching it and watching it on a small screen.
A vague haze of substance D use.
Yeah, yes.
I think paranoia is one of the words of the day here when you're watching this. Like, it really, I'm not one to use any recreational drugs, and I'm fucking paranoid watching this shit. Like, right? Like, it's that kind of movie that it kind of keeps you on edge and makes you paranoid, because I guess that's what he's trying to do, right?
Yeah, it's not a fun hallucinatory type drug movie. Like,
no,
Terry Gilliam, that I just mentioned, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Yeah. And I think there are some moments, though. There are some moments, like you said, some of the back and forth between the main three, you know, Arthur, Barris, and Luckman. You know, there's some funny back and forth moments of there, but I guess there's just not enough of it. It's like they go from comedy to serious stuff too fast for you to care about the serious stuff, you know. And then it gets really dark towards the end.
Yeah.
I did read where the, apparently, I guess Linklater wanted the family of Philip K. Dick to kind of approve of this before he kind of moved forward. And I think at least at the time, his Dick's daughters were the ones that were kind of in charge of the estate or whatever. And then, like, they had some trepidations about the animated part of it. But I guess in the end, you know, they were cool with it and they, you know, appreciated it for what it was. But
yeah, even, and I read something about that, that they gave Linklater their father's manuscript, the actual first manuscript of A Scanner Darkly after the completion of the film.
Now, I've never read that. Have you?
No, I haven't read Philip K. Dick, I love his, I see a lot of, you know, the adaptations out there, and I've read some of it, like Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? Of course, but I haven't read enough Philip K. Dick that, I would read the style even if the movie didn't, like I said, I need to rewatch it, but even if it didn't interest me as much as I thought it would, I would still want to read the novel.
Yeah. It would be interesting to know what the differences were. And I think I saw somewhere where they did want him to keep it as dark as the book was. So I'm assuming that means the end that we get here in the movie was just as dark in the book. So I think that was a big part of why they were cool with, you know, his adaptation of it.
Now, I do know that it is very, or somewhat autobiographical for Philip K. Dick. He had things going on with drugs in his life at the time, I guess, when he wrote that story, and friends of his and stuff. So a lot of that was autobiographical stuff he put in there as far as some of that darkness.
If I recall, wasn't there something at the very end that was like to my, just dedicated, was that at the beginning or the end? Maybe it was at the end of, where there was some allusion to that where like, and I'm assuming that was straight from the book. Where he's like, these are for my friends that, you know, lost the battle, so to speak, you know. So clearly that was people that were in the middle of some harsh drug use and just didn't make it through, right?
Yeah. That's what I assumed got from that. Well, sad, without reading the book, that's enough.
Yeah.
Was the case, but knowing that it was real stuff that happened to him and his friends.
It does.
I think it's not the cyberpunk aspect, but the drug aspect.
I think it really does get you started off good, though, with the paranoia right out the gate with that. With Freck sitting there freaking out because he sees bugs everywhere.
Yeah.
I don't care who you are, man. You're watching that, you start itching. You're like, damn.
Yeah. Hey, ain't no damn doubt.
Yeah. Get a bit and shine. Because that was CG, I guess, but that the animation really makes you, it makes you, you start scratching yourself.
And then how about the part in the diner when he was imagining the girl's top coming off?
Oh, yeah. The waitress is just talking to him and she's just stripping as she's talking to him. And he's just staring like, yes. I like that. One of my favorite early scenes toward the beginning of the movie was when Downey's character comes in and he's bought a bike. And then there's like this long 5-minute diatribe about how many gears are on the bike.
Yeah, that was good. That 18 was pretty, years. It's 18 years. Bike tells 18. He's counting those.
Yeah, they're counting.
There's nine.
Then they're going to go like beat the guy up or confront him about cheating him out of gears or something. Like, that's
he took the other nine off and he has them at home. He's going to sell them to me later.
Anyone that has ever taken any type of drug in their life, recreational type drug, right, has had to have had some moment similar to that moment right there. That's probably one of the more correct depictions of being high on something I've ever seen in my life, where like you're just going on about nonsense for 15 minutes straight. Like none of this matters anything, but here it is. We're just going to talk about the gears on this fucking bike. That was hilarious.
And like that happened during that scene I was talking about too, where they had all that banter back and forth in the house for a while. And I wish that I wanted to see more. I mean, the movie's not supposed to be about that, but that part really worked for me, I think.
What do you think was up with that scene where Barris, you know, Downey's character, just watches Woody Harrelson's character, Luckman, he just watches him choke. Like, he heats up like a TV dinner or something and starts eating and then starts choking. Dude, like, straight up, like, almost dies, passes out. And he's just watching it happen. and then calls
him. Then afterwards, the guy, help me. Like, you know, I do the Heimlich or something like that. And then he turns it around on him. And he's like,
yeah.
But he's coming at him like, you just something stupid is like choking like a child does or whatever on this. Then you're turning it around on me like I'm the asshole.
Yeah. Meanwhile, he didn't do anything to help him and he just watches him choke out. I guess it's just to show that he's like a bad dude. You know, he's manipulative. And because even by that point in the movie, you know, Barris has already reported Bob to Bob. He wanted to report Bob Arctor, but he doesn't know. He's talking to Fred, right, quote unquote, but it's Bob, right? So he's telling Bob on himself. So you already know by this point in the movie that he's kind of an unsavory character, but that one was kind of like, all right, well, I guess he truly is just a major asshole, and he's, you know, he didn't care about these guys at all. What it turns out to be, right, is he's a drug dealer, or he's highly connected with drug dealers, right? I'm talking about bears. And then that's essentially what this is all about. Like, most of the movie is you think that Bob is trying to take down, he's trying to use Barris and Luckman to get to the higher ups, right? But really, in reality, they're just trying to get to Barris. And they were using Bob to get there. And then once they finally got there, he's so racked out on taking Substance D that he actually pretty much just loses his mind with this stuff, right? And then they decide to use that to their advantage by sticking him on to this rehab farm. It's called New Path, where if they know that he's, you know, just kind of, you know, messed up from taking this stuff, they'll take him in. And then they're hoping that, well, once he gets in there, maybe something will, maybe those brain cells will snap back and he'll know he needs to help us take this thing down. He'll give us some evidence that will take this whole thing down. And that's essentially how the movie ends, right? Is he's there and he does have this brief moment where he picks up one of the flowers, which I guess the flowers are what they make Substance D out of. And he puts it in his shoe. He's like, I'm going to take this to my friends at Thanksgiving. So I guess somewhere in there, there was enough to know that, like, this is my evidence, you know, and we'll be able to take this down, right? So there's a lot of twists and turns that get you there, but that's essentially what the movie's about. And I guess the double twist is, you know, the reveal of Donna, the girl that's hanging out with them all the time, Bob's girlfriend, is his boss. She is Hank. Donnie, I'm sure you were so wrapped up into it at this point. You were just like, feed me more.
Yeah, I was confused, man, like, to say the least.
I think that's a big part of what they were trying to go for here, though, is the confusion, you know, how it would be if you were, like, totally drugged out of your mind and trying to live in this world of paranoia that they're in. So I think in that sense, Linklater does a good job of making you question everything that's going on, what's real, what's not, right? Trust nobody, that kind of thing.
Yeah, like, I still enjoyed the story, but it was just like, I think it's exactly what you it's exactly what we talked about, which we may have talked about this a couple of days ago, but, you know, it's kind of question your own reality.
Yeah. And you know, and I can appreciate those type of movies, you know, when they come along, although they can be extremely fucking confusing. And I think that's what we got here. But I think it makes enough sense in the end to where you know what happened, all, you know, and that's where it's dark, because, like, they basically purposely let this dude fry his brain so they could take advantage of him. And then he still has enough in there to know, like, well, I still have a job to do. You know, so that's the sad, dark part of it, is like, yeah, they royally screwed this dude over, but he's still trying to help him out, whether he's aware of it or not. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's an interesting take on it, and I guess we can go ahead and get into the final thoughts and star ratings on it. Donnie, I guess we'll go ahead and let you go first. What are you thinking?
You know, this one's weird. It's quirky. Yeah, but, you know, it kind of got old after a while, despite, you know, because I had never seen it. I wanted to see it for a long time, and I just never got around to it. But I was like, you know, let me throw this one up, see what happens. And, you know, landed on it, was excited to watch it. But, you know, after the kind of hurt my brain a little bit, you know. But and, you know, it did kind of get old after a while. But
I don't want to think this much. Stop it.
Yeah, I was just like, oh, my God. But no, despite my issues with it, it's still worth a watch. I'm not sure if I would actually watch this one again. I might. Yeah, my rating, I'm at about a 2.5.
Now, this is Cult Corner, so we're comparing it to other Cult Corner movies, right? You should take that into account. So
yeah,
2.5 stars.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm about a 2.5. That's where I'm at.
Tiana, I guess we'll skip your score for now because you haven't finished watching it. But, like, up to the point you had watched it, were you enjoying it? Were you split? What are you thinking?
I was liking it. Mm-hmm. I think I've got halfway through. I thought it was funny and all. I mean, the animation part did kind of get annoying after a little while.
Yeah, you almost think that it's going to kind of slip, you know, in and out of it, right? Like, you think at some point, like, let's have some real shots in here. But no, I mean, it's pillar to post, right? Animated all the way.
I feel like some of it, like, real quick, wasn't animated, like, far away. Like, sometimes the cars weren't, I don't think, the background.
Yeah, possibly. And that could, I was thinking more along the lines that could just be like that distance thing where, like, you know, you could look at something up close, like a pixel thing, right? Like, look at it up close, you can see all the pixels, but far back, you know, you don't see them, right? So that could have been something like that.
Yeah. But I am interested in watching the whole thing again, even though now I know the ending.
Well, remember, we gave the spoiler warning, so you're supposed to put on earmuffs. So.
All right. I'll just give it a 2.
Well, I do think, though, you know, I'll mark you down for a 2 for now, but I think you should finish watching it and then come back on the anniversary show and give your final, you know, your final say and final rating on that, because I think you need to, you know, even though we have spoiled it, right, you know, but I think you need to see it for yourself and see how things play out. But, Smoke, what'd you think of it?
Yeah, it's kind of like I'd mentioned into that in the beginning and mentioned again at some point earlier in the show was, well, first of all, we watched it on a small device, which we're going to rewatch it for sure, because Johnny didn't get to finish it and I want to re-rate it. Mm. I was tired, so I couldn't, like, I was dozing in and out, and so I lost the plot line. It's good, though, to hear that it wasn't just me. It's just a confusing movie sometimes, I guess.
Oh, I can't. I thought maybe. Absolutely. I was
tired, kind of, you know, whatever, not following it or whatever, but yeah, I'm going to give it my undivided attention the next time, but that we do watch it and end up rewriting it at the end of the year or whatever. I also agree that the animation is cool visual at first. Like you were saying, the trailer, I saw the trailer back in the day and that's what first interested me in it, I think. And then, you know, the story showed up. I just kept passing it up for whatever reason. That visual kind of draws you in. But then, as Tiana was saying, and like Donnie was saying, it kind of gets a little, kind of outweighs its welcome, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
I enjoy rotoscoping, as I mentioned, like in the older movies when it was used as an effect for a scene, not the entirety of the production. So, you know, when it's the entire movie is rotoscoped, I know it goes with the theme of the drugged out sort of paranoia, and also the suit that he was wearing at the time. They probably wouldn't have been able to, if they did this live action, I mean, it wouldn't probably have looked as good if they had to have that suit flicker and do all those things.
Probably would have had to have doubled or tripled the budget. To, you know, to pull that off, even something similar to that.
True. So it works for the things they needed it to do in this movie, for that suit and for other, you know, the paranoia aspect and all that stuff. So, but yeah, it just kind of grinds on you a little while after, I guess. But like I said, I want to watch it on the big screen too, so I can, like, you know, get a better idea of the visuals.
Yeah.
I'm sure I missed a lot of stuff that was going on. There seemed to be a lot of stuff going on in the visuals themselves, in the backgrounds of things and whatnot, that I feel like I probably missed watching it on a smaller screen. So. And yeah, being sort of watching it to a certain point, I think maybe 40, about the halfway point, like 45 minutes in, and I just had to go to bed because I was too. It was a point where it was like, I need to go back because I missed this. So at that point, I'm like, no, okay, we stop. Go to bed. I'll finish it tomorrow. Then I finished it, but I wasn't able to again get my undivided attention to it because I had to almost listen to it like a podcast because I was at work where, you know, I can listen. Can't, you know, give my attention to watching something, but I can have one earbud.
It's like reading a book where you keep falling asleep and then you keep reading the same paragraph 5 times in a row. Like, God damn it. You just have to close the book and go.
Oh, yeah. Finally put it down.
Yeah. Fuck, I'm not concentrating. Go to sleep.
Yep. So, yeah, not the best of conditions for reviewing or, you know, watching, reviewing, and rating a movie, but I'll try for now. I'll give it I think for now I'm going to probably go with the 2.5, and then we'll see what happens when I rewatch it at the end of the year.
I'm going to go with the same rate. I'm going to give it a 2.5. And I say that with respect to actually enjoying it more this time than I did the first time. The first time I probably would have gave it like 1.5, 2. So I'm like, you know, I appreciate the efforts. I appreciate the look of it, but it didn't hit for me back then. Now, you know, that I've seen it and I knew what to expect, even though it's been a long time past, I enjoyed it more this time around. And I guess maybe I was paying more attention. It didn't lose me as much on the second viewing. And I think it is noted that it is one that you probably should watch more than once to catch everything. And even beyond the fact, like you said, you were tired and watching it and not catching everything, even if you had been, I think there's still stuff to catch here. If you can kind of, you know, really dig in and pay attention to nothing but this, don't let your mind wander and really focus in on it. And I think you'll appreciate it a little bit more maybe, but you know, that's just my opinion. But, I give it 2.5 for some of the same reasons and for different reasons too. So I think it's a solid flick, one worth checking out. And I think we all agree, you know, other than Tiana being able to finish it quite yet. Right now we sit at 2.38 stars out of 5. So that's pretty fair. You're knocking on almost 50% there. That's a fair score. And that's generally what you'll see when you look around. Like even on IMDb, it got a 7 out of 10. So that's roughly about what we gave it, you know, maybe a little higher. And the Metacritic score was 73. So it's about the same there, right? So percentage wise, that's out of 100. So I recommend checking it out, but it may not be one of your favorite movies, and get ready to put your thinking cap on, right? Because it can be slow at times. Although I think Downey, Woody Harrelson, I mean, I think they all nail it, you know, casting wise. It's a great cast and they do a good job. But I, like you guys said, I think the animation can throw you a little bit. It kind of gets tiresome, you know, somewhere in there. By halfway through, you're like, all right, that's enough of this shit, you know? But if there's anything negative to point out. So I guess, you know, as far as our ratings and thoughts on it, we'll leave it there.
Also, I just thought about this, but Winona Ryder and Keanu Reeves were kind of love interested in this movie. And the last time that happened, I think, is, you know, was in Dracula.
Bram Stoker's, you know, Dracula.
Oh, yeah.
I did think about that. And they might, I swear it feels like they might have been in something else together. They just feel like they work together very well. There might have been something else, but if not, I mean, they're good on screen together. Even in something that's super animated like this, you know, they're still acting and everything. So they're good together and they're both great actors. So but before we let this one completely go.
Where's the cult connections? Come out and play!
Oh, man, I haven't heard this one in a bit.
It's
been a bit. With cult connections, we connect the current movie episode by any cast or crew connections to past Spook Show episodes. So for Scanner Darkly, there are no cast connections, surprisingly.
That is very surprising.
Yeah. The only connection we have is producer John Sloss, who was also a producer for Session 9, which we did, you know, a while back.
Which I think was one we probably all universally love, probably more than this one, right?
Oh, yeah.
That seems like forever to go. It might have been.
A while back. I don't remember what episode that was, but
I'm looking. It's episode 107.
Okay, there you go. So, yeah, wow, it was almost literally 100 episodes ago.
Yeah, almost. Yeah. Pretty close.
That was the only connection?
That's it. That's all.
Well, we don't do the kill count, the gore score, and all that jazz because this is Cult Corner. But I think, like I said, 2.38 out of 5. We recommend it enough for you to go check it out at least once. Just get ready to, you know, put your thinking cap on and pay attention. Please, for the love of God, if you're watching this one, pay attention because, like Smoke said, this isn't one you can just have playing in the background and kind of giving a half-hearted watch to. You really do need to pay attention so you know what's going on. And you'll have a better appreciation for it, I think. We'll leave it there for now. Coming up next week, we go back to the horror rotation. And Tiana, this was your pick for next week, episode 205. So what are you picking for us?
Phantasm 2.
So this is going to follow up Phantasm, of course, which we watched. That was a while back, too, matter of fact. When was that, Donnie? That was probably 2 years ago as well. Ironically, it was two episodes before Session 9. It was episode 105.
Oh, nice. Yeah, it was.
Another 2 years ago callback. So it's been a while, but we're jumping back on, you know, as we like to say, anything but the Hellraiser franchise. I think it's kind of where we're at right now. So jumping back, leapfrogging back on over to the Phantasm franchise with Phantasm 2.
Yeah, from 105 to 205.
Yep, well, there you go. Serendipity. Trust me, we don't think about you like that. We're not that smart. We're not that clever. So come back next week for that. So for Will, of course, who couldn't be with us, Donnie, Tiana, Professor Smoke, I'm Josh. We are the All-American Spook Show, and we'll talk to you next week for Phantasm 2.